On Samach Vav Omer Aleph, verse 6th line. Good morning, Ellie. We're holding on Samach Vav Omer Aleph, 6th line. We're in the middle of talking about, we said that according to Rabbi Yehuda, it should be, first of all, we said in the Mishnah that according to Rabbi Yehuda, if the Sar Lashem or the Sar Lazazel gets disqualified because its partner died and then we need a new girdle on two new animals, then the Tanakama had said that the one that's not going to be used goes off to graze until it develops a mum, etc. And Rabbi Yehuda had said that it has to die because he considers it to be one of the Chatoris Hamis. Then we said in the Gemara that there's the possibility maybe Rabbi Yehuda would hold when it comes to Matzah Shekel, for example, that what you were supposed to bring this year, you can instead use for next year. So we have the case where people sent their Matzah Shekel with a shliach to Yerushalayim, it got lost or stolen on the way, eventually it turned up. So Rabbi Yehuda had said that now that they have two sets of Matzah Shekel, then one set can be for this year and one set can be for next year. So then we said in that case, then with the Korbanos of Yom Kippur, why would Rabbi Yehuda say that Tomos? Why would he say they have to be locked up and left to die anyway? If they're still within a year old or within the age that they should be for next year, why can't we use them for next year? And we went through several possibilities why, and each one of them the Gemara shot down by saying, even if you're going to say that this reason might apply to one of them, it wouldn't apply to the other one. And we're not going to say that because of a Gzeira Dirabanan, because you might mix up one with the other, or you might mix up one scenario with the other, therefore you're going to leave the animal to die. So we're still trying to figure out why Rabbi Yehuda would say about these korbanos tomos when there is the possibility of using them next year. By the way, in this connection, Tosfos Yeshanim points out, now, for example, one of the five chatoris hamesis is something called kipru ba'leo ba'acher, where the owner ended up using a different animal for his korban. The classic case being that a person lost his animal for a chatas, he took a different one, brought it instead, and then afterwards the original one turns up. And we say that original one then is a chatas hamesa. But the difference is, over here, these korbanos, so first of all, a chatas that a person brings, let's say, because he ate chalev or broke Shabbos or any of the couple of dozen other things that a person brings a chatas for, once he brought that chatas, he's never again bringing a chatas for that exact same action. It could happen, of course, he does the same action again, but that would be much less likely, and therefore we're not going to keep around the animal on the off chance of that. As opposed to here, you have to bring this korban every year. And also, there's the point, really, you're not bringing it for there's no particular aveda that you can point to and say, somebody definitely did this, and therefore we need to be mechaper for it. It's meant to be mechaper, we said, for Tumas Mikdash V'Kodshim, in case somebody went into the Bes Mikdash when they were Tomei, or ate Kodshim when they were Tomei. Not necessarily did that happen. So therefore, we have less reason to say that it should be considered a case of Niskapur Ba'alel Ba'acher, where the owner used a different animal for his korban. Therefore, in principle, we should be able to say that we can use it next year. So why not? So here's where we're up to then. Ella Omar Rava. So rather, Rava says the reason why Rabbi Yehuda does not want you keeping the animal for next year and using it, and rather he says Tomos, is Gzeira Mishum Takala. It is, after all, a Gzeira Dirabanan, but the reason is because he's concerned about Takala. Takola means a stumbling block, meaning that you might misuse it. We'll see soon what we mean by that. What might you misuse it as? So it's a braisa. Ein makdishin, we learn in a braisa that you're not allowed to be makdish an animal nowadays. You're not allowed to declare something hektish because we have no basis in hektish. By the way, the Rama does bring from Rishonim, from Rashba, that if a person nowadays does say that something is hektish, v'di'evid, we're not going to have this problem that we're going to say in this braisa over here. We assume that he meant for tzedakah. Only if he explicitly says that he wants to do it as hektish for the Bais HaMikdash, then you have a problem. Anyway, so you're not allowed to be makdish nowadays because we have no Bais HaMikdash. V'ein ma'arichin, you're not allowed to make a a pledge of an erech, where you say erki olai, or erech pleni olai, and you have to give the amount that it says in the Torah. Ve'en machrimin, you're not allowed to declare something cherem nowadays. There's two types of cherem. One type is a type of hekdesh that goes to bedek habayis, so obviously that you can't do nowadays. There is a different type of cherem called cherem koyanim. According to Rashi, in principle, you would be able to do that, because fine, you give it to a koyan, same as any other. Same as anything else you give to the Kohen. Tosfos says not necessarily, because it's true once you give it to the Kohen, it becomes chulin, but until then it's considered a type of hekdesh, and therefore we're saying that you shouldn't do hekdesh nowadays. And nowadays you don't have, you're not going to necessarily find Kohenim as often, so you may have a problem with Takola. Anyway, v'im hekdesh v'herich v'herich v'hechrim, continues the Braise, if a person did declare something hekdesh, or an erech or cherem, then what do you do? Behema, if it was an animal that he declared hekdesh or whatever, te'oker, then we should uproot it, which we're going to say soon what that means. Peiros ksus v'kelim, if he donated produce or clothes or kelim, yukobu, then you have to leave them to rot. In other words, you're not allowed to have enough from them, so you have to leave them to rot. Mois uklei matches, if it was money or metal kelim, which those are not going to rot away, Yerlechano, the Yamamelech, then what he has to do is he has to take the value of them and throw it, or the things themselves, as the case may be, and throw them into the Yamamelech. So nobody has Hano from them. The Ezer, who Ikur, what is the, when we said that an animal, you have to be, yet Te'oker, what does Ikur mean? It means Noyel, Delos, the Fanel, the Mason Eleh. Means you lock up the door in front of it and it eventually dies on its own. So therefore, in other words, so we see that there is this problem of takola. If you're machdish something nowadays, you might accidentally come to, well, you're going to see what you might come to do with it, and therefore we see that you destroy it. So, says Rava, now let's consider takola demai. What kind of takola are we concerned about in the case of karbonis nowadays, in the case of not karbonis, kodrim nowadays, or in the case of the pyrosur of Yom Kippur that we said that you didn't use this year and hypothetically you could use next year? E takolodakrova, are you talking about the problem that somebody might be mak with them during the year? Well then, why are we only worried about that in this case? Afilo kol re'ias nami. The same thing should apply any other case, all the cases where we say that a korban is, that an animal for a korban is possible, and we have to leave it to graze until it develops a mum. Why aren't we concerned that while it's grazing, you might take it and use it for a korban? Obviously, we're not concerned about that. Why all of a sudden, when it comes to the korbanos of Yom Kippur, should we be concerned? If you're talking about the takola, that you're not allowed to shear the animal, you're not allowed to work with it, same thing. Then you should say the same thing also as far as all the other animals that are left to graze. Same idea. The fact that we see that we're not concerned about that shows we're not concerned about takola in that sense. So why all of a sudden now? So okay, when it comes to the kodshim that a person might be makdish nowadays, we understand why there might be a problem with takola. Because you're going to have to keep them around indefinitely because you don't know when the Bais HaMikdash is going to be built. But here we're talking about, you know, you can use them next Yom Kippur, so it should be no different than the case of an animal that you're sending it off to graze, and at some point you know it's going to develop a mum. Why all of a sudden is Rabbi Yehuda worried about takola over here? So the answer is, la'olam takola dakrava. We are, in fact, talking about the takola that he might be mocked with it by mistake during the year, which he can't because it's supposed to be reserved for Yom Kippur. So, v'hanach d'lav b'neach ravaninhu. So, the case where an animal is, the case where you have to send it off to graze, you can't bring it as a korban, because the whole point is we know you're not going to be bringing it itself as a korban, you're only going to eventually bring the value of it as a korban, therefore, loy torid b'hu. Therefore, he's not thinking of them all the time, so therefore he's masiach das from ever bringing them as a korban. Therefore, we're not concerned that in the middle there he's all of a sudden going to forget that it's supposed to be, that it's no longer supposed to be a korban, and he's going to go end up being mocked with it. As opposed to hach the basa krovahi, but here we're talking about these korbanos of Yom Kippur. They are, after all, if we allow him to save it for next year, then it is something the animal itself can eventually be brought as a korban. Therefore, toted bo. Therefore, he's always thinking about it, and therefore he might end up being mocked with it during the year. And therefore, Rava says Rav Yehuda is concerned about that. Therefore, he doesn't want you keeping it for the rest of the year. Instead, he wants it to be. Instead, he wants it to be a chatas amesa. The Gvura Sari has an explanation. I mean, he says, so what kind of a comparison is that? Because we're saying that nowadays, how is Rava bringing a proof? Because nowadays, where the korban may can be, where the animal may be kept indefinitely, because you don't know when the Beis Hamikdash is going to be built. How are you proving from that for Yom Kippur? So he says, it's not really, we're not really using it as a proof that, of that idea. What we're saying is, we see that there is a concept of Takola, and we see that there is a concept of Takola, and that because of it, we have to destroy the animal. So therefore, in other words, Rava wants to do like this. In the sugya up until now, we had several explanations why you can't use that power of Sawyer for next year, and each of them was because of Xera Drabonin. And each time we shot it down, we slugged it up, we said, so, because of Xera Drabonin, you're going to leave an animal to die? Rava is bringing a proof to say, here you have an example, where because of Xera Drabonin, we're leaving an animal to die. Therefore, you see that there can be such a thing. So yeah, it's not that we're not bringing, in other words, a proof that just like an animal, just like nowadays, an animal that you were makdish, you leave to die, so it is with the animal that should have been brought for this year's korban for Yom Kippur. All we're bringing a proof is there is such a thing as because of a gzera saying that we should lock up an animal. So that's what Rabbi Hoda is saying. By the way, Tosfos and Tosfos Yishonim mention over here that if a person is makdish land, then in fact, what you do is you take the value of it and you machalal it on that value and you throw that into the Yam HaMelech. Tosfos doesn't discuss that. As far as Tosfos says that maybe you can't do that with metalphalin. On the other hand, in Shulchan Aruch it says that maybe you could. A person was makdish, even metalphalin nowadays, conceivably you could do that. You put it to them, instead of having to destroy the animal or the clothing or whatever itself, instead maybe you take the value of it and throw it into the Yam HaMelech. Okay. So the Gemara says, V'takola atzma tanoi. This point that we're saying that there's a concern about takola, that you might use the animal for the wrong purpose, and therefore we're saying when a person is makdish an animal nowadays, then we have to lock it up, and we're saying that the korbanos that are left over from one Yom Kippur, Rabbi Yehuda doesn't want you saving them for next Yom Kippur, he wants them to be a chatas hamesa. So that itself, tanoyihi, there is in fact a machlokes tanoyim on that point. Not all tanoyim are concerned about that point of takola. The Tanya, we learn in a Braisa, the Tanya Choda, because we have two different Braises. One Braisa says, Pesach Shalei Korav Berishin Yikrav V'Sheni. One Braisa says, if you have an animal that was supposed to be used as the Korban Pesach for the first Pesach, on Erev Pesach, if you didn't, Yikrav V'Sheni, then fine, what you do is you bring it for Pesach Sheni instead. Meaning, let's say, so we don't mean that you yourself weren't able to bring a Korban Pesach Berishin, of course there's no Chiddush in that. What we mean is you yourself used a different animal for your Korban Pesach. Let's say you designated this one and it got lost. So now, after you brought your Korban Pesach, you found this original one. So fine, what you do is sell it to somebody who needs it for a Pesach Sheni and let him use it for Pesach Sheni. You could, but we're saying you don't have to. It could still be used for a Pesach. Instead, you can sell it to somebody who needs it for Pesach Sheni. Vasheni, on the other hand, if it wasn't brought on Pesach Sheni, Yikrav Lashana Abba, you can still bring it next year. So as far as the age, so we talked about at the top of the Amud, we talked about yesterday, there is the possibility that it could be, according to Rebbe, that it could be just under, that it could just get in under the wire. Because we said the animal has to be at least 8 days old to bring it as a korban. You have in a regular year, not a leap year, you have 353 or 4 or 5 days. So even if you have a year of 355 days, 8 plus 355 is 363. Rebbe holds that a year for purposes of korbanos is 365 days, so therefore you get in just under the wire. Yeah. So you can be makrav it next year. That's one braisa. The Tanya idach lo yikrav. Another braisa says you can't. Now, my lab for takola plivi. On the face of it, isn't the machlokas about takola? So the first braisa is saying, go ahead and keep it for next year. We're not concerned that sometime during the year you're going to think to yourself, wait, I know this animal is supposed to be brought as a korban at some point, and you're going to go and be makrivit, and you can't, because it's supposed to be a korban Pesach. Now, by the way, of course, as you said before, I mean, doesn't it become a shlomim automatically? Tosfos Yishonim brings a couple of possibilities over here, one of them being that given that you are planning to save it for next year, if you want to bring it to the shlomim during the rest of the year, you would have to do akira. We talked about before the question we talked about earlier a couple of days ago. We talked about in Pesachim, if you want to instead bring it to the Shlomim, does it require Akira? Do you have to verbally say, do we have to say, I'm taking this away from being a Pesach and making it into a Shlomim? Right, we have different opinions whether you need to or not. Tosfos Yeshayahu says that would be when it's never again going to be brought as a Pesach, because by the time of next Pesach it's going to be too old, then maybe it needs Akira or not. But here, where it is in principle still young enough, next year, then maybe everybody agrees that you need Akira, and therefore, so the concern is you might shecht it sometime during the year without Akira, and then it's possible, because then you're shechting a Pesach some other time during the year. According to the second Braisa, you can't be makriv it at all. You have to, so you send it off to graze, let's say, maybe, but whatever. You have to be masiach das, that you're never going to bring this one as a korban, apparently because of takala, because you might bring it sometime during the rest of the year. The Ritva adds also anyway, he says, even if you say that, even without that point, there are different opinions whether it requires Akira or not. So our Braisa could be according to the opinion that it requires Akira anyway.
The color is that much of the laws just maybe there.
Well, that's the thing. So that's one Braisa saying you can save it for next year. So apparently that Braisa is not concerned about Takala. It's not concerned that during the Tana of that Braisa is not concerned that during the year you may think to yourself, wait, I know this animal is still going to be brought to the Korban. Let me hurry to the Bais Mikdash and bring it, forgetting that it's supposed to be reserved for a Korban Pesach for next year. And the second Braisa apparently is concerned about that. So that would be the Machlokas. So you see that there is a Machlokas whether we're concerned about Takala. So my love for Takala, please. The Gemara says, not necessarily. Everybody might agree that we're not concerned about Takala, or a different gears that is over here that maybe we are concerned. Anyway, we could say the two Braises argue in the Machlokas of Rebbe and the Chachamim that we said before about what we count, how a year counts for purposes of Korbanos. Do we go by the Jewish date, or do we go by the secular date? So therefore, according to Rebbe, we go by the secular year, 365 days. Therefore, according to Rebbe, it is possible that an animal that we were going to bring for this year Pesach, we could still just manage barely to get it in for next year as well. Whereas the other Braisa says, according to the Chachamim, there's no possibility on that. So there's no possibility of that, because if the animal was at least 8 days old the previous Erev Pesach, then by the time it comes next Erev Pesach, it's already a year old. Well, that depends on the size of you. That depends on the size of your. It depends on the size of your group. If you have a small group, you might want to do that. That way, you're going to make sure all of it is eaten. Okay. So the question is, you can't say that's the machlokas, because the braisa continues, the same thing is true as far as the money, that if you designated money to buy your korban Pesach this year and you didn't use it this year, then you have two different braisas, again, that say whether you can use it next year or not. And by money, obviously, there's no issue of mechusas man. So obviously, there is in fact a machloikas about whether we're concerned about Chakola. So one Tana is concerned about it. He's afraid you might use the animal for a korban during the year, or that you might use the money for something, for some other korban or for something else during the year. And the other Tana is not concerned about that. So we see that after all, we're correct in saying that in fact whether Chakola is a problem is a machloikas Tanoim. So when Rava had said that Rabbi Yehuda, so now going back to the parents Sarah of Yom Kippur, when Rabbi Yehuda is saying that if they were lost and you used other ones, and now we have the original ones, Rabbi Yehuda is saying Tomus, then Rava is saying it's because of Takala, so now we understand not all Tanoyim would agree with that point. Some of the Tanoyim would say that you could in fact save them for next year if they're still going to be within the proper age. Now that we talked about, we spent the last few blocks talking about various dinim involving the designation of the par and the sur, of the sur lashem and the sur lazazel, and what happens if one of them dies or gets lost or what have you. Now we're going back to the seder avodah of Yom Kippur. What actually gets done with the sur lazazel? So the Mishnah says, "Baloi etzal sur mishaleach." The Kohen Gadol now comes over to the sur mishaleach. So originally, all the way back in the fourth perek, when he did the girdle on the two seirim, so they were standing near Shar Nikanor by the girdle. Then we said we placed the Sur Lazozel Keneged Beis Shiluchoi, which we said one explanation was we put it facing towards the gate or inside the thickness of the gate or whatever. So now the Kohen Gadol goes over to there to do the vidui on the Sur. There's no reason, unlike with the par and the sur before, where he brings them closer to the heichel. Here, there's no reason to do that. You're not bringing it to the heichel anyway. You're sending it off to go. You're sending it off to go to go to the azazel. Yeah. So, balei etz sur mishloach, b'simich shtei yadav olav. He places his two hands on it, smicha, for misvada, and he says the vidui now for the whole Jewish people. This is the third vidui of the day. Mechacha yomer. This is what he says. Ona Hashem, Chotu Ovu Poshul Lefanecha Amcha Beis Yisrael. Your people, the Jewish people, have Chotu Ovu Poshul, or we have Poshul Ovu Poshul Chotu. The different opinions that we had before on Daf Lamed Vav about the order that we should say them in. Ona Hashem, he continues, please Hashem, or Ona Vashem, as we say in the Seder HaVodah, which means with the power of your name, Kapano V'chatoim V'lavonis L'Apshoim, Shechotu V'sh'ovu V'sh'porcho L'Panecha Amcha Beis Yisrael, please forgive the Chatoim, the accidental Averis, and the Avonis, the deliberate Averis, and the Pshoim, the rebellious Averis, Shechotu V'sh'ovu V'sh'porcho L'Panecha Amcha Beis Yisrael, Kakosa V'seres Moshe Avdecha Lomer, as it says in the Torah of Moshe the servant, Ki Vayimazi Chapa Alechem Tares HaMekocha Tasechem, on this day he will Chaper for you to cleanse you from all your averus. Lifnei Hashem Titoru, you will be cleansed before Hashem. And va'koyinim va'omla imni ba'azara, the koyinim and the people who were standing in the azara, kshoyim shema hamafurish shu yotzim v'koyin gadol, when they heard the shema hamafurish coming out of the mouth of the koyin gadol, and there is even an explanation. It means the koyin gadol didn't even have to say it himself. It's like it would come out on its own from his mouth, yotze, like it would spontaneously come out. Yeah, in the good days, yeah. So when they heard that, they would kneel on their knees and bow down and fall on their faces in honor of Hashem. Now, by the way, this is the third vidui of the Kohen Gadol. This is the first time that we have this mention in the Mishnah. There are actually Girsois that have it in the earlier Mishnais as well. And conversely, there's a Girsois that don't have it over here either. So there are different explanations. Maybe the Mishnah is only mentioned, the Tosfos Yom Tov says, for example, the Mishnah is mentioned over here because it's the last one, so therefore it mentions it now in order to complete things. But we understand that the same thing was true as far as the previous Vidurium as well. We learned earlier in the Masech that 10 times on Yom Kippur, the Kohen Gadol would say Hashem's name, and every time he did, they would bow down, which we do nowadays in Shul. We bow down each of these 3 times to represent that. On the other hand, you have a girsa that doesn't have it over here either, in which case, because it has nothing to do with the avodah of Yom Kippur, it has to do more with honor of Hashem's name, so therefore it doesn't belong in the description of the avodah here in the Mishnayos, but they did in fact do it, and we mention it in the Seder HaVodah when we say it on Yom Kippur. There is also an explanation based on the Yerushalmi that what it is, it depends whether you were close to the Kohen Gadol or far away. If you were close enough to actually hear him say Hashem's name, then you bowed down and said Baruch Shem Kohen Machzor Anvad. If you were further away and you couldn't hear him, then you would just say Baruch Shem Kohen Machzor Anvad. Next. Masrei Lamisha Hoyomei Lichai. Next, the Kohen Gadol would now hand over the Sar La'azazel to the person who was going to take it to the cliff. Now, who could take it? Hakolk Sheirin Lahilichai. Everybody is kosher to take it. Koyinim Levim or Yisraelim. Ela Sha'osra Koyinim Gerlim Keva. But the Koyinim made a general rule, or Rashi learns a little differently. It means that they made the Koyinim to be a fixed thing. V'loy ha'imanichinis Yisrael Lahilichai. They did not allow Yisraelim to take it. Now, why not? So there's one of the Mephoshim on Mishnayos, Tosfos Chadoshim, has an interesting idea, right? The Chizkuni, one of the Rishonim who wrote a Pirush on Chumash, writes, based on earlier Sfarim, that whoever took the Sar La'azazel would be somebody who's going to die the coming year. So they would pick with Ruach HaKodesh somebody who they know is going to die the coming year. So now what happens is, if they pick a Yisrael, everybody's going to be saying, oh, look at this, the Kohenim are saying, here you have something, look at this, Shchita, which is kosher by a Zar, they're reserving for themselves. Something like this, where the guy is going to die next year, they have no problem sending a Yisrael. Therefore, like, they were forced to make it that only a Kohen should send it in order that everybody's not talking on them like that. Anyway, so they would send a Kohen. On the other hand, Omer Rav Yossi, not necessarily, Rav Yossi says, Maistav HaHilichai Ausala, it happened that Ausala, that was the guy's name, the Yerushalmi adds that he was from Tzipori, V'Yisrael Hoya, and he was from Tzipori. So you see, HaGoyis HaBach also adds the word Mitzipori. So you see that Yisrael could bring it as well. Next, the Kevesh Osuloi, they made a ramp for it, meaning, in other words, he didn't just walk with it on the ground, they had this high ramp in order that nobody can touch him or the Sar while they're walking out of Yerushalayim. And the reason is, you have a similar thing about a Parah Aduma. They made a ramp. There, the reason is because you don't want anybody to accidentally touch them and be metame them. Here, it's a different reason. Well, the animal, no, a live animal can't become tame, but the Kohen, who's on his way, the Kohen and all the people who are on their way to do the Parah Aduma on Harazesim, if anybody who's not toibled for Chatas, for Parah Aduma, touches them, then Midrabanan, and they make them tame. So therefore, they have this high ramp, ramp isn't really the right term for it. I mean, we're using the word kevah. It means like a bridge, sort of, right, like a causeway or something, which is high up off the ground so that nobody can touch them. So here, we're going to see. So the reason is because of the people from Babel, which we're going to see in the Gemara who those were, show you Mitzalshim Besairei, they would pull on his hair. Either it means his hair of the person, or maybe it means its hair of the animal. Anyway, V'omrim Loi, and they would tell him, Toyovatei, take it and get out of here, take it and get out of here. In other words, as the Gemara is going to say, they would say, look how many Averis we have. You got to get it out of here and get it to Azazel as fast as possible. So in order to keep him and the animal from being harassed by these people, they would build this Kedesh. So we'll see in the Gemara who these Bavliyim were and what's going on over here. Okay. So the Gemara starts off. Now, in the vidui of the Kohen Gadol, now let's remember, there's three viduyim on Yom Kippur. The first one is for the Kohen Gadol and his family. The second one is for himself and all the Kohenim. And the third one now is for the whole Jewish people. So why are we not? Now, each one includes the previous ones on the face of it. So, v'ilu b'nei Aaron am k'dei shechel l'karma. Now, in the first vidui, he says, ani uvesi. In the second one, he says, ani uvesi uvnei Aaron am k'dei shechel. So he's mentioning vesi again. Why in this one is he not saying Ani Uvesi of Ne'er Am Kleshecha and the whole rest of the Jewish people? So why not? Man Tana, so which Tana would say that? Omer Rav Yemiya, Deloike Rav Yehuda. So Rav Yemiya says, apparently not like Rav Yehuda. The Ikar Rav Yehuda, if our Mishnah went according to Rav Yehuda, Ha'amah Yeshlem Kapara Besarah Meshaleach. We learned previously, a Machloikas, we learned a few days ago, a Machloikas about what which segments of the Jewish people have their kapara with which korbanos or which animals. So we said Rabbi Yehuda holds that the par and the par kohen gadol is mechaper for the kohenim for trumas mikdash for kodshav, and the sir lazozol is mechaper for the kohenim and for everybody else for other averus. And Rabbi Shimon had disagreed and said that the kohenim are completely taken care of by the par and the sir lashem. The sir lazozol is only for the rest of the Jewish people. So our Mishnah seems to be not like Rabbi Yehuda. According to Rabbi Yehuda, he should be mentioning the kohenim as well. He says the kohenim also share in the kapara of the sar lazazel. Why shouldn't the kohen gadol mention him in his vidui? Abaya Omer. Abaya says no. I feel the tamer of Yehuda. You could say our Mishnah goes according to Yehuda as well. I mean, look, the kohenim are included in Amcha Beis Yisrael. So when he says Amcha Beis Yisrael, it means whichever Jews need the kapara at this point. According to Yehuda, that would include everybody, kohenim, levim, and Yisraelim. According to Shimon, it would include only levim and Yisraelim. Next, we said Mosrei Lemisha Meilichai. We said he handed over the animal to the person who's going to take it off to Azazel. So now the expression in the pasuk is V'shilach biyad ish iti hamidbara. He should send it with an ish iti to the desert. Now, what's an ish iti? That's what we're going to discuss in the Gemara over here. So turn it up on an ish lahachshu es azor. The word ish tells us that azor is also kosher to do it. And what does iti mean? Iti is maloshen ace, a time. So it means shehei mezuman. It means he has to be reserved for that from the day before. They can't just right now on Yom Kippur pick somebody. It has to be somebody who was picked from the day before. And when we say iti, when we say that he's designated and he has to do it at this time, that means v'afilu b'shabbos. It means even if this takes place on Shabbos, he still has to do it. Now we're going to see in a second. We're going to talk about so what's the problem doing it on Shabbos any more than if Yom Kippur is on a weekday. The same malachas apply on Shabbos and on Yom Kippur. No, so we'll, and anyway, what malacha is there? We're going to talk about that in a minute. You're allowed to walk in Rishus Adam. And he usually doesn't carry the animal. He walks with it. So what you
walk away.
You hold it by a rope or a bridle or something. Fine. We learned in Masechta Shabbos. We learned last year in Masechta Shabbos that you're allowed to walk with an animal in the street in Rishus Adam on Shabbos wearing whatever gear you need to protect it in the normal way. So fine. You'd be allowed to have a rope around the thing. That's a Bamei Behemei Yotzi. You have a whole parak on the subject of what kind of equipment and accessories and whatever an animal is allowed and not allowed to wear in Rishus Adam. Yeah. So, but Iti teaches us that in any case, you do it even on Shabbos, and we'll see soon what hypothetically there might be a problem on Shabbos that we need a pasuk to tell us otherwise. And Iti v'apilu b'truma, even if the guy is tomei, he still does it. As we're going to say soon, still goes into the azara and takes it out and does what he needs. No. Because if he's tomei and other people touch him, nothing happens. If you touch a person who's tomei, if he's an ava truma, then yeah, then you become tomei. But if he's only a rishon latruma, for example, you don't become tomei from touching him.
But there's no problem with him, person taking him
towards us. That's what we're gonna talk about soon. Okay. So now let's figure it out. Let's analyze that. Ish lahachshir is azur. We're saying the word ish comes to include that azur can take the sur lazal. So what's the chiddush? Pshita, isn't that obvious? Why would we think that a kohen has to do it? The answer is ma'udatem, a kapara ksivve. Okay, because you might have thought, after all, the pasuk does call it kapara, and kapara on Yom Kippur is supposed to take place. Kapara during the year takes place using kohenim, and here on Yom Kippur it takes place during the kohen gadol. Kamash malon, therefore we have to be told that no, even a zor can do it. One interesting point that the Mefarshim make is, we learned the other day that throwing it off the cliff is the equivalent of shchita of a korban. Therefore, we said, for example, that if its mother was shechted earlier that day, then you can't, because now it's oisiv es b'nai. So therefore, the same way as any zor can shecht a korban, the same way any zor over here could throw it. Yeah. Okay. We said iti v'afilu b'shabbos. We said that ish iti, the word iti means that you do it even on Shabbos. So the question is, l'may hilchsa? What chilul Shabbos would there be that you need a pasuk to tell us that you're allowed to? You're going to say the problem is he's walking outside the tchum. So what? Tchum is only d'rabbanan. You're not going to say the Torah is telling you a pasuk to tell you that you're allowed to be over on an issur d'rabbanan, which may not have even existed yet when the Torah was given. Which, by the way, you have an interesting point there. The Rambam holds that there is a tchum d'araisa of 12 mil. Now we're going to talk about tomorrow how far away was this cliff from Yerushalayim. We are going to have an opinion that it was in fact 12 mil away. So according to the Rambam's Shita, it would be a Tchum D'Araisa. However, we're going to bring different opinions that it was less than that, that it was 10 mil or whatever, so then it could still fit within the Tchum according to the Rambam. Or even if you say that there would be a Tchum D'Araisa involved over here, fine, the Torah wouldn't have to tell us that you could do it on Shabbos because you could make an Eid of Tchumim. So you could still make an Eid of Tchumen. So there'd be a way of doing it without being Mechal Shabbos. So there'd be no reason for the Pasuk to tell you, go ahead and be Mechal Shabbos. So what Chilul Shabbos is involved? The answer is, Amar Rav Sheshes, Loimar, the Chiddush, what the Pasuk is telling us, She'im Hoya Choyla, suppose the animal is sick, Ma'kivay Al-Ksefay, the person is even allowed, and so it can't walk, then the person is allowed to carry the Sar La'Zazel on his shoulders. Now, how does it come that an animal for a korban should be sick anyway? If it's sick, you couldn't have brought it as a korban in the first, couldn't have been part of the girdle in the first place. It became sick, exactly. We said before, the Sar Lazazel really only has to be alive. We had two different opinions. Reb Shimon had said until after the vidui, at least. Reb Yehuda had said until the blood of the Sar Lashem is finished with. After that, anything else that happens after that is not ma'akiv. So then you could have, hypothetically, that the animal got sick after that. So now, all of a sudden, it's too sick to walk.
But if it dies, you don't have to redo the whole thing.
So that's what we're saying. If it dies after that point, then you don't have to redo the whole thing. Right. Okay, so the Gemara says, Kiman. So okay, then, if we're saying that the thing is that he's allowed to carry it, then who would that be like? Apparently, Deloike Rav Nosson. Apparently, that would not be like Rav Nosson's Shita. De'i Rav Nosson, ha'amachai noseh esatzmai. After all, Rav Nosson says in the Sefer Shabbos that a living creature carries itself, and therefore a person is not chai of d'oraisa for carrying an animal or a person on Shabbos. So that if we're saying that the Torah has to give him a heter to be mechalal Shabbos for taking the Sar Lazazel, which means carrying it on his shoulders, on the face of it, that means that Rav Nosson would have to disagree with that because he says that an animal can carry itself. The answer is after the tamei Rav Nosson. No, you could say that it goes even according to Rav Nosson. Chol shining, because different when the animal is sick. When it's sick, it can't walk by itself. So therefore, you and we're saying you have to carry it. Even Rav Nosson would agree that then you don't say chai no sa tzatzmai. So normally, carrying a sick animal like that, a person would be chayev on a d'oraisa level for being mechal Shabbos. But in this case, the Torah is telling us by the word iti to go ahead and do that. So the Gemara says, Omer Rafram, zois emeres eru v'hitzol l'Shabbos ve'en eru v'hitzol l'yem kippurim. So Rafram says, you see from this, since we're saying that you have to do it even on Shabbos, now, what about on a regular Yom Kippur? Yom Kippur on a weekday, you have the same, you know, don't you have the same 39 malachas that you're, that are also as on Shabbos? No, we see that the Isurim of Hotzah, that the Isur of Hotzah does not apply on Yom Kippur like it would on Shabbos. In other words, because why, otherwise, why would the Torah need to be mechadish that you can do it even on Shabbos? It should have to say that even any Yom Kippur, you're not allowed to carry from Rosh HaYochid to Rosh HaRabin. So the fact that we're saying only Shabbos implies, says Rafram, that the concept of Hotzah does not apply in Yom Kippur. Rashi says that there's no reason to mention Eruv over here because Eruv Chatzeris has, because Eruv Chatzeris is because of Hotzah, so there's no reason to mention it separately. On the other hand, there's different possibilities. Maybe Eruv over here means Eruv Tchumen. Anyway, Tosfos points out that there's a Gemara elsewhere in Krisus which slugs up what Rakram says and says that no. It's one thing, the Torah tells us you have to send off the Sur Lazozel, that's why there's no Chiddush that you can do it on Yom Kippur. Because obviously, the same way as the Torah tells you to do many other Avodas of Korbanos on Shabbos or on Yom Tov, even though usually those would be Malachas, so here also, the Chiddush is that even if it's on Shabbos, so in other words, yes, on Yom Kippur there is an Isra of Hotzah just like there is on Shabbos, which of course is the Halacha. A different Mephoshim talk about, so why doesn't the Gemara mention that point over here? And one basic thing that Tosfos Yeshanim says is, look, you know, Divrei Torah, Aniyim B'makom Echad, Ashirim B'makom Echad. Here, the Gemara didn't bother going into the details of what Raphaim is saying there in Krisus it does. Okay. Then we said, so fine. So that takes care of, so now we understand why the Pasuk needs to tell us V'afilu B'Shabbos. So according to Rafram, it meant that because you're allowed to carry on Yom Kippur, not on Shabbos. In Krisus, we slug that up. But rather, the point is that you should have to carry it anyway. That even if the animal is sick, you carry it. The fact that you're going outside the tchum, that would anyway only be an issu d'rabbanon, and we don't need a pasuk for that.
If it falls on Shabbos, it would be a problem.
So that's what we're saying, that if it falls out on Shabbos, even if the animal is sick, if we didn't have the word itzi, we wouldn't know. We would think maybe you're not allowed to carry the animal. The word itzi is teaching us you're allowed to. Yeah. Okay. Next. We said, iti v'afilu b'tumah, we said, even if he's tamei, so l'may hilksa, as far as what issue is there involved with the sor la'azazel, with him being tamei? So Omer of Sheshes, loyma, what it means is, she nitma m'shalchai, suppose that the person who's supposed to send it, the ish iti, who was designated before Yom Kippur, if he became tamei, doesn't matter, nichnas tamei la'azara, he still can go into the azara while he's tamei, or Meshalchai, and then he takes it and takes it off to Azazel. So this is even, so that's what it means, Iti Vafi Lebetumah, that even though he's Tomei, he can still go into that Zara and take it.
Well, and what would be a problem if someone else takes down this thing?
Because it has to be Ish Iti, it has to be the Shilach, it has to be the Kohen Gadol gives it to him, and therefore, yeah.
And he can't bring it to him.
So the Kohen Gadol can't bring it out to him, it means it has to be done in the Azara, therefore, yeah. So now we have, so now that we're going to see a little bit of discussion on this point. Shalois Rabbi Eliezer. They asked Rabbi Eliezer some questions about these din. First of all, Chola Mahushiyah Kiveo Rapsefer. This question, if the animal is sick, are you allowed to carry it on your shoulders? Now, he didn't want to answer them directly. Because, as the Gemara is going to say soon, Rabbi Eliezer would never say anything Shalois Shomam and Pi Rabbi. If he didn't hear something explicitly from his Rebbeim, then he didn't want to give it. So therefore, he didn't want to give a straight answer over here. So therefore, instead of giving an answer, he said, he says to them, this animal is strong enough. It could carry me and you. In other words, it's an impossible question. The animal is always going to be strong enough. There's no reason to even ask about what happens if it becomes sick. It's always going to be able to walk. Then they asked him, Chola Meshalchoi Mahu, what happens if the person who was supposed to take it, the Ishiti, what if he becomes sick? Maushi Shachen of Yad Acher, can he delegate it to somebody else to take it? And again, he evaded the question, Omalahem Ehe Vesholim Aniva Atim. You and I should be in peace. In other words, again, what do you need to ask about it? I'm not sending it, you're not sending it, we're all going to be healthy and well, and therefore you don't need to worry about the question. Then they asked him a third question. Well, you have the Chizkuni that says he's going to die during the coming year. That doesn't mean that right now he's already sick. It could mean sometime during the coming year he's going to, yeah. The third question is, they asked him, what happens if he pushed the Sur La'azazel off the cliff and it didn't die? So again, he evaded the question. Does the guy have to go down the cliff and kill the animal some other way? And again, instead of answering the question directly, he evaded the question. So should all your enemies be destroyed, Hashem. In other words, he's saying again, he's saying it's always going to die there, and I'll buy all the enemies of Hashem should be destroyed like that. So therefore, you don't have to worry about it. With that said, Marasha says, even though we're saying that Rabbi Eliezer did not want to answer anything that he didn't say from his Rebbeim, in what he's saying over here, there is a hint to the answers. Each one he is hinting at an answer, he's just not saying it straight out. The first one, he's telling them, Yochel hu lahakim, ani va'atem, what he's hinting to them is, what? So he's hint, so here, let's see. So Marasha says two explanations on what he's saying over here.
I think you said there's two people, so you're telling the two people not to carry.
So what he's saying, no, it's true that two people carrying it wouldn't be an Issur D'oraisa, but it doesn't matter. We said you're allowed to carry it on Shabbos anyway. Iti bapi the Shabbos. No, so what he says is like this. So he's saying that, we are healthy. So if we were to ride on this animal, there wouldn't be an Issur Shabbos because it's Chai Noseh Satzmai. But if this animal is sick, then like we said before, on the face of it, there would be a problem with it. And you need a pasuk to tell it. So therefore, actually, so he doesn't learn from Ish Iti that it means that you're allowed to. So he would say, if it's sick, then Taka, you have a problem. You can't carry it because he doesn't hold of what we said before, Iti Vafilu B'Shabbos. So therefore, so he's hinting in his answer, he's saying, me and you, if we were to ride on this animal, there's no Chilul Shabbos involved because me and you are healthy. But if this animal is sick, then you Taka have a problem. The second question that they asked him, if the person becomes sick, then he answers them that, yes, he says, you or I will be healthy, meaning yes, the Kohanim can designate somebody else, such as me or you, but he would not be allowed to designate somebody else. So therefore, in fact, the lashon we had in the Gemara is, hey, b'shalom, ani va'atem, that you and I should be in peace. Marasha says the word wouldn't be b'shalom, but rather b'shiluach, changing the mem to a ches. So you or I could send it, but he can't pick somebody else to replace him. The Kohanim would have to do that on the spot.
The person is sick, can he actually go on, I mean, I know it's started carrying a person.
No, he can't ride on the Sarah anyway. It's Kodeshim. He's not allowed to do Malacha with it. Yeah, not allowed to do Avodah with it. Anyway, and then the third one, Marasha says, when they ask him, what happens if the animal doesn't die on the way down? So he says, Kain Yovdu, he's saying that, yeah, as the next Mishnah is going to say, Lohoi Magil Hatsiahur, Adjanase Evodim Evodim, it's always going to die falling down the mountain over there, and therefore you don't need to worry about it. So therefore he is in fact giving a hint to the answer in all of his three things. Then Marasha goes on to say that also he's hinting at something else over here. We know that the Sor LaZozel represents the power of Esav. Esav is Sor, he's hairy like a goat. So therefore what he's saying is like this. So what happens? So the Sor LaZozel represents the idea that Hashem takes the Averus of the Jewish people and places them on Esav. One idea being because Esav is the one responsible because of all the golos and all the troubles they cause us. They're the ones who cause that we do. They're the ones who are the cause of a lot of our avodas. So therefore, so the first question was, what happens if the animal becomes sick? So he answers them, Yochel hu laharkiv ani va'ata, that animal should be carrying the burden of me and you. In other words, yes, those avodas should be placed on Esav. Let him be responsible for them. We shouldn't have to be, adrabe, if you make him carry the goat, that would be, in effect, you're saying this person has to carry on himself all of the avodas of the whole Jewish people. And of Esav, why should he have to do that to the poor guy? The second question about what happens if a person becomes sick. So he answers them, that person is taka going to die during the coming year, like the Chaskuni says. However, you and I are going to be bishalom. We're not going to be leich bishalom. We're not going to go bishalom, which is what you say to a person who's dying. We're not mizumen lamisa. So therefore, no, don't send it with somebody else. Send it with this guy, even if he's not feeling well. And the third question about yered achar v'misenu, this sir represents Esav. Let him be destroyed over there on this cliff, rather than you should have to do it. So again, according to Marasha, he did in fact give them answers. He just didn't want to say it straight out because Leishama Meirabe. So next, the Gemara continues to digress with other things that they asked Rabbi Eliezer where he didn't give a straight answer for the same reason. Shalos Rabbi Eliezer, Ploini Mahu La'olam Abba. They asked him, does Ploini have a share in Olam Abba? Now, who is this Ploini? Rashi gives two explanations. One is that there was a certain person who lived at that time. They asked him, what do you think of this guy's meisim? Is he worthy of Olam Abba? The second explanation, Rashi says they were asking about Shlomo Amalek. Now, what do you mean that he shouldn't have a place in Olam Haba? After all, the psukim do say in Sefer Melachim that vayasara be'eni Hashem, that he did evil in Hashem's eyes. Now, the Gemara tells us in Shabbos it wasn't that he personally worshipped Avodah Zarah, it's that he allowed his wives to, and he wasn't Moicha, but still, on the surface, it's saying, so, and in fact, the Gemara in Sanhedrin says that the Anshei Knesset Gola at one point were thinking maybe Taka, he should be on the list of people who lost their Chelek Olam Haba. So now they're asking him. And Tosfos brings another explanation.
The Pashtus,
what it was, is he was old and weak. He Taka wasn't that old. He was only 52 when he passed away. But still, he had lived a long, hard life, and then now he was too weak to be Moshe. It's still held against him. You see that Dovid HaMelech was very weak at the end of his life also by Chasub of Godim, and still when he's told what's going on with Adoniyahu, he pulled himself together and started giving out orders right and left, so Shlomo should have been able to do the same thing. Anyway, Tosfos brings another explanation from Rabbeinu Hananel and also from the Oruch that the question was about Avshalom. Avshalom, during his rebellion against David, there were 10 Pilagshim that David had left behind. When David and his whole court escaped from Yerushalayim during Avshalom's rebellion, he left behind 10 Pilagshim to watch the palace, and Avshalom went and raped all those 10. They're his father's wives. So does he have a place? So the question is, were they Eshesish, or do we say that Pelegesh is defined as somebody who has Kiddushin? In that case, he was Mizana with an Eshesish. He should lose his place in Olam Haba. Or do we say there was no Kiddushin, and then what he did is not that bad? I saw a different, interesting other explanation that the Torah Tzmima brings, some other people bring, that maybe the Pliny they're asking about is Yoshka. After all, with everything that he did, he's 40 years, does he have a place in Olam Haba? Anyway. So, instead of answering them straight out, Omer Lahem, he says to them, Lo she'al tuni el al pleini. Apparently, you mean to ask me about somebody else. So, according to Rashi's first explanation, that they're asking about Pliny, somebody who lived at that time, then he's saying maybe he meant to ask about somebody else who lives in our time. Like, he evaded the question. According to the second explanation, that they're asking about Shloimeh, he says maybe instead you meant to ask about Avshalom. In other words, Shloimeh, there's no question, he has a chelek olam haba. The question might be about Avshalom. And then, according to the explanation that they asked him about Avshalom, then he's saying that maybe instead you mean to ask about a different Pliny, because Avshalom, after all, does have a chelek olam haba. They asked him also, Mahu lahatzu roya kibsa min ha'ari. Can the shepherd save the sheep from the lion? Now, what is this talking about? So on the face of it, it means exactly what we're talking about. If a shepherd's sheep are being attacked by the lion, what would be the dinim of saving it? Now, in that case, what's the question? So one possibility is we're talking about on Shabbos. And the answer would be that no, because you can't save animals on Shabbos. However, Tosfos brings that this is a mashal. They're asking about the story of David and Uriah and Bathsheba. In the Pesukim over there afterwards, when Nathan HaNavi comes to Shlomo, to David, to criticize him for what he did, he gives him a mashal over there where he compares Bathsheba to a sheep, to the only sheep that belongs to a poor person, and therefore Uriah can be thought of as the shepherd because he was her husband, and the lion then would be David, Gur Aryeh Yehuda. So now the question is, would it have been right for Uriah to try to save Bathsheba from being taken by David? Would he have had the right to do that? In other words, the basic question is what the Gemara mentions in other places: did Uriah in fact give a get to Bathsheba before he went off to war? If he did, then she's allowed, then she's able to marry David. If not, then she's an Ashishish, and it would be his responsibility to protect her. So that's the Gemara mentions elsewhere, the Kolayot and Mochamas Beis David. With that said, by the way, you have Machloit Rashi and Tosfos in that Gemara in Shabbos, whether it was an unconditional get, whether it was a conditional get, etc. Anyway, so according to that, they're asking him in a hinting way about that story. Did David do completely the wrong thing by actually taking an Eish HaSish, or was there a heter for what he did? And again, he evaded the question, Amal Lahem, Loi Shal Turi, El Ala Kivsa. So he says, apparently you only meant to ask about the sheep. Why are you asking only about the sheep? In other words, ask about the shepherd. So they ask him, okay, Ma'u l'chatzal ha'royah min ha'ari. Okay, can you save the shepherd from the lion? Meaning, in terms of the nimshal, did he do wrong by having Uriah killed in the battle over there? Uriah representing the shepherd and David representing the lion, did he do wrong with that? And again, Amal Lahem lo shol tuni el al ha'royah, why are you only asking about the shepherd? In other words, again, he's evading the question. They asked him another question, Mamzer Mahu Lilash. What is a Mamzer able to garrison his father? And again, instead of answering directly, he answers them, Mahu liyabim. Think of it. You might mean to ask, can he do yibum to his brother's wife? Marsha says, actually, there also you have there's an answer hinted in what he's saying. He's saying the same way as the same dinim would apply, the same way as a mamzer is zoikik liyibum. In fact, if you have the only surviving brother is a mamzer, so he can't do yibum because he's also to marry a bas yisrael, but he would have to do chalitza. But at least there is zika involved. So yes, the same answer would be he is able to yarshin, but he doesn't tell them straight out. He only tells it them as a hint. If we say before that the ploini they were asking about ploini ma'ol oilam abba is Yoshka, then we have another reason why they're asking about a mamzer, because that's what he was after all. Okay. Another question: they asked him mahu losu des beisoi. Is a person allowed to plaster his house nowadays after the churban, or not? Because he needs to whitewash to plaster his house with white paint and plaster over there maybe is inappropriate after the churban. And again, instead of answering directly, he answers mahu losu des kivroi. You should ask whether a person is allowed to plaster his kever. Now, Marsha explains elsewhere in Bava Basra that, in fact, here also he's giving them a hint to an answer. There are, in fact, two different opinions in the Gemara and Bava Basra whether you're allowed to plaster your house nowadays. One says no, and the other one says yes, as long as you leave the Zeicha L'Churban, the one Amma by a one Amma. So, therefore, the answer that he's giving them there about a kever can be understood either way. So, therefore, he's telling them whichever opinion you follow as far as that, then you'll have your answer whether you're allowed to or not. Now, why did he do this? The reason is not because he's just trying to distract them with other words, as if like he doesn't know the answer, so he's just trying to tell them something irrelevant. Rabbi Eliezer had a practice. He would never say anything that he didn't explicitly hear from his Rebbe, so he didn't hear an answer explicitly to any of these things, therefore he didn't want to say them. What do you mean? A person is supposed to be Mechadish and Torah. We have many, all Rashas, where Rabbi Eliezer has opinions. They're not all. No, but that's it. So but if we're saying that he never said anything that he heard from his Rebbe, so there's a lot of different explanations. One possibility is maybe the Sfas Emes says maybe this was only while his Rebbe was alive. So all this happened while his Rebbe, Rabbi Yechon Ben Zakkai, was alive. Afterwards, sure, he could say his own opinion. There's a different possibilities. Maybe what we mean is, sure, he would come up with his own svaras. But none of these things are things that depend on svara. All of these things are things that depend on a kabbalah from your Rebbe. So since he didn't hear anything explicitly, now many other chachamim would say that, okay, I didn't hear explicitly from my Rebbe, but I can infer from something my Rebbe said that they would hold sick and such. Rabbi Eliezer didn't want to do that. If he didn't hear explicitly, he didn't want to say it. A couple of places where the Rebbe talks about this in Sichas. In one place, the Rebbe draws a distinction between halacha, where he would only say mashallah shamam pirabai, as opposed to other areas of Torah where he'd feel free to speak his own svaras and his own opinions. And in another place, the Rebbe talks about the idea where you have avderach like you have in Hilchos Kashrus. I did Torah lemiflat loybala when you have a keli when you're kashering it, it's busy exuding what's inside it. Therefore, it can't absorb. Here, it's kind of the other way around. Rabbi Eliezer is so busy absorbing what he learned from his Rebbeim that he doesn't have the ability to go and give out. So if he heard a klal from his Rebbeim, then to go and deduce a prat from it and give it out, he didn't have the ability or he didn't want to do that. Okay. More on this. Other questions that they asked Rabbi Eliezer, where he didn't give a straight out answer. Shala isha chachoma asked Rabbi Eliezer, a smart lady asked Rabbi Eliezer, me'acha shemaisa ha'egel shavin, given that everybody who worshipped the egel did it in the same way, Mipnei Ma'in Misas and Shava. Why didn't they all die the same way? And we see that there were three different ways that people died. Some people were killed by the Levim, Simu Shchaba Al Yerechai. Some of them, Moshe ground up the egel and put it in the water, and they drank it, and then they blew up like sotas. And some of them, there was a plague by Yigaf Hashem Asa'am. So why three different punishments if on the face of it everybody worshipped it the same way? So that's what the Gemara is going to say, right? So Amalah, so he didn't want to answer directly. He says to her, Ein Chochma La'isha El B'Pelach. A woman's chachma is only in the spindle, in spinning thread. The pasuk says, and by the Mishkan, that every wise-hearted woman spun the thread. So in other words, he didn't want to tell her straight out. Again, either because he didn't hear it from his Rebbeim, or there's Yerushalmi that says the reason is because Rabbi Eliezer held you're not allowed to teach words of Torah to women. Which you have a discussion about that in Masechta Sota, what exactly you're allowed and what exactly you're not allowed yet. With that said, by the way, there are a couple of interesting explanations how, again, these words have, after all, are the words of a chacham, sichas tamid chacham and sichas talmud. So there are a couple of interesting explanations that he's actually hinting to an answer to that. One of them being, you see, when it comes to spinning that you have, depending on the project, either you're excited to do it yourself, or you're not so excited, you delegate it to somebody else. So therefore, the same way over here, you can talk about how excited and whether people are doing it with aid in Basra, or whether they really believed it in their heart or not, as the Gemara is going to go on to say. Another point I think Rabbi Yonasan Eibeshit says is that you see that the women didn't want to give their jewelry for the eagle, but did all of them also tell off their husbands and say don't do that, and their husband didn't listen? Or did some of them say, you know what, I'm not going to participate, but I'm not going to get involved one way or the other either? So therefore that will depend on how the husbands and what the husbands actually ended up doing. Okay. So, Itmar, so what's Taka the answer? Rav and Levi, Chad Omer. So Rav and Levi argue Taka what the difference was. Chad Omer, one says, Sibeach the Kitcher Besayef. What happens is if a person actually brought a korban, if a person actually shechted or offered a korban to the eagle, then Besayef, then he gets killed with the sword. Now, if a person worships Avodah Zarah, usually he's supposed to get skila. Rashi says at this point, they didn't have the Arab Mrs. Baskin had not been specified yet. Therefore, they still had the din of Bnei Noach, and Bnei Noach, if they violate any of their seven mitzvahs, are killed beside him. Moshe talks about that, so why didn't Moshe ask the Eibishter what punishment they should get, like we find by the Mekoshesh Eitzim? Rashi on the Pasuk actually says a different point. Moshe treated them like an Ireni Dachas. And an Ireni Dachas, Taka gets saved. Okay. So that's one. So if they actually brought korbanos, then they get saif. Gifet benishik, if they only hugged and kissed the eagle, the misa, then they get misa b'dei shemayim, which is the plague at the end of the perek. Samach b'lababa, if the person is only happy in his heart that they made the eagle, but he didn't do anything about it, then b'hidroikon, then he gets punished with hidroikon, which is the punishment of the soita, where they drink the water and they swell up. That's one opinion. V'chadoma, the other opinion is, Edim v'hasra b'sayif, if the person worshipped the eagle, and there were Edim and there was Asra, then he gets the sword. Edim b'loy Asra, if there were Edim that saw him do it, but there was no Asra, then the Misa, then he gets the Misa b'dei shemayim, the plague. Loy Edim b'loy Asra, and if there was neither of the above, then the Hidroikon, then he gets the Hidroikon from drinking the water. So that's the answer, why there were the three different ones. Okay, so further on this topic, Omer of Yehuda, Shivte shalevi le ovad avaris chavim. Shevet Levi did not worship Avodah Zarah. None of them were involved with the eagle. Shenema, as the pasuk says, Vayamid Moshe b'shar ha'machne. Moshe stood by the gate of the machne and says, Mi l'Hashem Eli, and all of Shevet Levi gathered to him. So you see, all of them means that none of them had worshipped the eagle. Yosef Rabbeinu v'kamala ha'shmaita. So Rabbeinu one time was sitting over and saying the statement of Rabbi Yehuda. Espe bnei Rapapa ba'Abba l'Rabbeinu. The sons of Rapapa ba'Abba said, what do you mean? You have later on in Parshas V'zois HaBracha, when Moshe is giving the bracha to Shevet Levi, he says, ha'oimer l'aviv l'imay l'ri'isiv. He says that look at Shevet Levi. They were so zealous for Hashem's honor, they didn't even say about their father and mother. I didn't see him. In other words, if their own father or mother had worshipped the eagle, they went and dealt with them. They didn't say, it's my father, it's my mother, it's my brother, etc. How could I do that? So you see on the face of it, there were Levim. The father of a Levi is also a Levi. The answer is no. Aviv means Avi Imam Yisrael. The word Aviv in the Pasuk can mean his mother's father would be Yisrael. So if his father, a Levi, married a Bat Yisrael, then his grandfather from one side is Yisrael. So if that grandfather had worshipped the eagle, then Shevet Levi would say, I don't care that he's my grandfather. He has to be done. Achiv, and when the pasuk continues, his brother, means Achiv Mi'imim Yisrael, means a half-brother. If they have the same mother, again, where his mother had previously been married to Yisrael, and then she had a son from him. So now, if that son later on worshipped the eagle, then and Bonav, and when it says his children, again, means Bnei Vita in Yisrael, it can mean the Levi's grandchildren where his daughter married, where the Levi's son, where the Levi's daughter, rather, married a Yisrael, and the children are Yisraelim, and if they worshipped the eagle, then Levi would kill them anyway. So we see, in other words, so it doesn't have to mean that the actual Levium worshipped the eagle. None of them did. It means even if a Levi is very closely related to a Yisrael, still he didn't pay that any attention when it came to being zealous for the honor of Eishtim. We said in the mission of a kevesh osuloy v'chulah, we said that they made this ramp or this causeway for the guy who was taking the sur la'azazel, and we said because the Bablian would be pulling at his hair and telling him, get out of here as fast as possible. So who are these Bablium? Omer, Rav Baba Chana, loy Bablium hoyu el Alexandrium hoyu. They weren't actually from Babel, they were actually from Alexandria in Egypt. So why are they called Bavliim? When we talk to Sonim as a Bavliim, the people of Eretz Yisrael hate the Bavliim. Now why would they? We learned earlier in the Masechta, we had Rish Lakish had criticized the people of Bavel. He said, if you guys had come up, all of you, when it came to build the second Beis Mikdash, then the Gula Mitzvah Shlema would have come. Instead, we had only a temporary Beis Mikdash. So therefore, so the Bnei Eretz Yisrael held that against the Bnei Bavel that they hadn't come up. So therefore, so now the Bnei Eretz Yisrael did not like the Bavliim. Therefore, Hayukurin Oisan Ashman. Therefore, when you had anybody else, including the Bnei, including these people from Alexandria who they didn't like, they would nickname them Bavliim. That's according to Rish Lakish. The Gemara goes on. We learned over there on Daf Yod that Rabbi Yochanan disagreed and said even if they had all come up, since the second Beis Mikdash was built by permission of Kodesh, therefore the Shechina didn't rest in it to the same degree. Yeah. But according to Rish Lakish, according to Rish Lakish's opinion, at least that was a reason to dislike the Bnei Bavel. Anyway, so therefore, so they used Bavliim as a term of anybody they didn't like. So even if these people are actually Alexandrians. So Tanya of Yehuda, I mean, we learn in a Braisa, exactly that. Rabbi Yehuda says they weren't Bavliim, Loi Bavliim Hayu, Alexandriim Hayu, Amalei Rabbi Yosi, Tanuach Daitcha, Shehi Nachter Daitcha. So Rabbi Yosi says to him, may your mind be at ease because you made my mind at ease. Meaning, Rashi says Rabbi Yosi's family was from Bavel, so he always felt bad. The Mishnah is saying that these Bavliim are such rough people and such troublemakers over here. Now, when he was from Rabbi Yehuda, that these people, the troublemakers, were in fact from Alexandria, then he felt much better. There is a very interesting explanation that the Sefer Dodos HaRishonim says on this, a whole different take on it. He says what it is you find, he brings from Josephus' history, that at one point there was a group of Jews from Bavel who they were very tough, rough kind of people. So Hurdus imported some of them to serve as border guards on the borders of his kingdom, and some of them afterwards wound up in Alexandria. So the point is, we don't mean all the Bavel. We mean there's this group that of rough, tough, mean people who came from Bavel. And after all, I mean they were the kind that could serve as border guards. They're pretty tough kind of people. Some of them settled in Alexandria. When we're saying that they hated them, we don't mean the Jews of Eretz Yisrael. We mean the local Jews of Alexandria didn't like these newcomers. So therefore, instead of calling them Alexandrians, like now you belong to our city, they continued to call them Bavliim after where they came from. And therefore, so now they live in Alexandria, but in origin, their family, a couple of generations back, came from Bavel, and therefore they were called Bavliim. So then Rabbi Yossi is saying, Tanuach Daita, Shainach Daiti, I feel much better that the Jewish community of Bavel as a whole, which has such great Talmud Chacham and all, is not being put down like this. We don't mean the Bavliim as a whole, we mean that contingent Bavliim who moved to Alexandria. Okay. By the way, the Mishnah in Menachos also mentions the same group, and it mentions something interesting about them as well. It says you have the chatas of Yom Kippur, not the sir Lashem, but the regular chatas of Yom Kippur has to be eaten Matzah Yom Kippur. You can't eat on Yom Kippur because it's a fast day. So, but what happens if Yom Kippur comes out on Friday? You can't roast it because it's Shabbos. But you don't want it to become noiser. So it says these same Bavliim, it says, would eat it raw. So you have the same kind of thing over there, where it says it weren't Bavliim, it was Alexandrian. And they were actually, the Gemara has it the other way around. Rabbi Yossi is the one who says that they were Alexandrian. Rabbi Yossi and Rabbi Yehuda is very happy with that. So the point is, even though on the one hand, it means these guys are very, very, very disgusting people, they would eat raw meat. On the other hand, you see how much they were doing, the Shem Shemayim, that they don't want the korban should become noiser, and therefore they're willing to do such an ekeldik thing and eat. It had to be raw because they couldn't cook it. Okay, let's finish off the Gemara. Toil that say, they said, take it and go out. So Tana, that we learn in a Braisa, what they were saying is, Mash Shohi Tzvira Dein, what are you keeping around the Sir, V'choyve Dora Sagin, when the Averis of the generation are so much, and get it out of here as fast as possible. Marashah explains, based on the famous Gemara, that which the Rambam brings, and the Rebbe used to talk about it all the time, that a person should always consider the world Chetzi Zaka and Chetzi Chayev, everything is exactly balanced, half and half, and if a person does one mitzvah, he's Makril Kapskos, and the other way around. So they're telling him, look, you have all these Averis over here on the Sir, while you're dawdling over here and not going fast. Meanwhile, one person might do one more Aveda and then it tips it over to the side of that. Get it out of here as fast as possible in order that we don't have that problem. So therefore, they'd be pulling on his hair and telling him to get out as fast as possible. So to avoid that, they made this cash. Nothing to do with your mind.